little bit of everything on a Tuesday. A lot of football to start. You can rewind on the Odyssey app. We'll mix in some baseball, including something Aaron Boone needs to change immediately. And I give Moon credit, Teague, because he already announced that Giancarlo Stanton is going to play right field again today, which will be back-to-back games for Stanton. It'll be the third game in 4 days that Stanton is playing right field, and clearly that gives the team the best chance to win.
Yeah, you got to have his bat in the lineup.
100%. And he's looked good out there. I said that to you guys even before he started playing out there. We shouldn't be afraid of Stanton playing right field. He doesn't get hurt playing the outfield, and I think he's actually a decent defender. Now, can he run around all over the place? Not really. But if he gets to the ball, he'll be fine. So I give Boone credit for adjusting, because this is a time of the year, mid-August, where there ain't that much time left. You know, Boone likes to say it's all right in front of us. Okay, well, it's not like there's 100 games left. So there's something else he needs to change, and it needs to continue tonight. And to me, this is something I never would have thought of in April. I wouldn't have considered this in May. But Aaron Boone brought it to our world when all of a sudden he said, hey, Ben Rice is going to catch. Mm. Well, Ben Rice should be the everyday catcher. Let's just move on. Let's do it.
He is catching tonight.
He is?
The lineup is out.
He's doing it. That means Ben Rice is catching back-to-back games for the first time. Mm. That means Ben Rice is catching 3 times in 4 games. I don't know if I'm ready to say Boone's doing it fully as the everyday catcher, but he's well on his way, and he needs to.
Yeah, Ben Rice is one of those young, developable players who you just haven't, over the course of the season, seen enough of. You need to give them the opportunities. I mean, both the teams in this area are having this issue with the development of the young players simply because they're not in positions to get enough time. And then you worry about the options and everything else. And it just give your best bat the chance to develop into the player that you want him to become.
Well, and also, I think his catching has been decent back there. Like,
Early on, it wasn't. It was some shakiness early.
Well, because he hadn't done it in a couple of years after they moved him to first base. And obviously, once he's called up, he wasn't catching very often. But back there, he looks adequate. I'm not going to tell you he's better than Austin Wells, but he looks adequate back there. And here's the crazy part. After the elite catchers, and really this season, there's only been 3 of them. Obviously, Cal Raleigh's having a historic year. Will Smith and Hunter Goodman. If you put Ben Rice's stats that he's put up this year, which is a 790 OPS and 17 home runs. If you put those numbers up against any other catcher in baseball, he's a top 5 catcher in the sport when it comes to offense. Like, it is not an offensive position, but if you're in a spot where you could have a guy putting up that kind of number while catching and at least doing an adequate job, like, you got to do it.
Of course you do, but you also need to have him be an adequate defender as well.
I think he's been adequate.
Right.
I'm not reminding you Johnny Bench here or Pudge Rodriguez in his prime, but he's been adequate. And even his pitch framing stats are halfway decent. What's funny about Boone, and I don't get it. Maybe you could explain this to me. So he's in the lineup, as Sean just confirmed. Great. Back-to-back days. Last night after the game, listen to this question posed to Aaron Boone and listen to the dismissive tone of his answer.
Considering that and his consistent, steady at bats, can you see him potentially getting the bulk of the time behind the plate?
No, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, what was that?
I mean, it wasn't no.
It wasn't no, but it was like a shutdown.
It wasn't yes. it was like, don't press me to make a decision for your publication. You know, I'm going to do that on my own time.
It makes me think of something else. And Sean's going to love this because I want to be an umpire with this. I don't want to have my biases and opinions shade what I just heard. Okay? That sounded like a guy who said, I need to ask mommy or daddy.
Yep.
I have to admit, I'm a big proponent that Boone does make the lineup. Boone makes his decisions. I kind of push back on
the
rhetoric.
And by that, you're talking about Brian Cashman?
Yeah. That's what it sounded like.
I actually think there's further proof that he needs to ask mommy and daddy.
Why?
Why, after Ahmed Rosario went on the IL, did the team call up J.C. Ascara, a third catcher, if the immediate plan was now to play Ben Rice every day? Because wouldn't you go back to more of a traditional, okay, now we figured it out. Ben Rice can catch. Austin Wells is a backup. They now have less flexibility, so it sounds like mommy and daddy called back up Ascara while Boone wants to play Rice every day, and now he needs to confirm what's going on.
I will disagree with you on this. As a roster geek, I love the idea that if I've got a guy who's a plus offensive catcher who can also play another position, in Rice's case first base, and will DH occasionally, which he's done, and I'd want him to DH on the days he doesn't catch, it behooves you to have a third catcher on the roster. Like, even with Rice catching most of the time, there are still going to be days in which I'm like, I'm going to DH him. I may play him at first base.
But they're not going to DH him right now with Giancarlo and Aaron Judge. That's my issue.
You can't.
There's less room for him to DH.
Sean is right here because who how are you keeping Aaron Judge in the lineup if he's not DHing?
Because a couple of things. First of all, first base is still in play. I think that Goldschmidt is still not locked in as the everyday first baseman. Like, there are going to be some tough righties he sits against. So I think Rice is still in factor at first base. And you're right as of now, but once Judge is able to play the outfield, which Boone said is going to happen in a few days, I think it reopens up the DH. I just think the roster does have more flexibility one way or another with Ascara there having a third catcher. Okay. So I disagree with that part. What I'm giving in on is that answer, the dismissive answer last night when initially asked about Rice catching, sounded like, I mean, I got to ask Mom. I don't know yet. Why are you pressing me? Sometimes my kids ask me a question. I'm like, I can't answer that. I got to ask Mom.
I don't have the authority. I'm dead.
I don't know. Yeah,
exactly. Starts with a D.
Yeah.
That's that one who starts with an M.
That's right. But good decision by Boone, because this has to happen. I think Ben Rice is earning it. I think his catching has been enough. It's been good enough. He's a plus offensive player behind the plate. It just makes you a better team when Ben Rice is catching. And a part of that is Austin Wells. Look, Austin Wells has been one of the biggest disappointments this season. If you're ranking Yankee disappointments, it's up there. And so this is kind of a response to the fact that Austin Wells is losing his grip on the starting catching job. Let's go to Cologne in Hawthorne, New Jersey. What's up, Cologne?
Hey,
what's happening?
Hey, Evan. Hey, TT.
All's good.
Hey, guys, I'm the Giants. You know, they could be significantly better, and you can see it on the field. But because of this tough schedule, what if they start 3-7? Is it better? To get a better record or to get Jackson Dart in the game and develop it?
I think more than the wins and losses, it's going to be what does it look like? If the Giants are losing, I'll go back to last year because we talked about this on the show. There were some Giant games that were not watchable. It was not a NFL team on the field
right.
for some of those games. And it was embarrassing. It was bad. It was like, this isn't even worth putting on TV. If the Giants look like that, then there is a major issue that has happened. And so much of what that question requires is, what does it look like? Like, what is a 3-7, to his point? What does it look like?
How could a 3-win season, and that is a low number, which I think is on the table, by the way, not
but he was
to sound
just
like
talking
a
half the season, by the way.
Right. But let's say they win 4 games.
Yeah.
Which is.
And over the course of the whole season.
Over the course of, they go 4-13. How does that not look bad? You know what I mean? Like, if every game was close, and wouldn't we still say, well, you won 4 games? That doesn't look good.
We also saw Dan Campbell do that. Right, where he won, I forget how many games it was, but there was a lot of close games. And the next year, after having a tough start, they turned it around and almost made it to the postseason.
The problem was that was also his first year.
You're right.
3-13. Right. 3-13-1 was year one, where, like we talked about with Aaron Glenn, he's going to have a lot of grace period or a grace period. Brian Daboll's in his fourth year.
Yeah.
Walk me through how a 4-win season in the fourth year of one being a head coach can actually look, well, it wasn't that bad.
It won't. It won't.
That's my point. It won't.
It won't.
Even if every game is close, we'd still be saying, well, but you lost this game, you lost that game, you lost this game.
Hold on.
What?
Let's just play this out. They're 3-6 versus a very difficult schedule where they're playing close games for Russell Wilson, and they decide, you know what, at 3-6, we're going to Jackson Dart. And Jackson Dart has the Eli Manning-like 0-4 where they lose every game until maybe that Raider game, second to last game of the year. He shows promise, he wins the game, you see him getting better. That's not going to be a happy 4-win, but doesn't that 4 wins look much different than an incompetent 4 wins?
Yeah, but piggyback Evan here, that was in Tom Coughlin's first season.
Right.
So it was different. It was survivable because you had the grace period.
But
if that would have been Jim Fossil, like if we had drafted Eli and it was Jim Fossil's last season.
What would have happened to you?
After coming off of, what did we win, 4 games that previous season? I can't remember. In 03, whatever that was, and we go 4-12 then, and Eli looks great in the last, I think he still gets fired.
Okay, but.
Thank you, Tiggy. I've tried to make this point to Sean. No, he doesn't believe me.
Because I think this is important. John Mara went out of his way with Daniel Jones to say, we did everything we could to screw this kid up.
Yes.
He was handpicked Jackson Dart by Brian Daboll to be.
Joe Shane basically told us that.
Right. So if now ownership gets beyond and you see enough, even though you're not winning games, like, wow, this kid's really coming along. He wins a game at the end of the year. Maybe it's only their fourth win.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to use his own words with Daniel Jones and do everything he can to screw Jackson Dart up?
It'll be a debate.
You know, that's...
It'll be a debate. And it's not one that we should have now, but it definitely will be a debate. Because I think if Josh, if Brian Daboll has made or turned Jackson Dart into a guy that we can clearly see is going to be the answer at quarterback, then it's going to be hard to fire him. Now, that being said, like, you throw this back to the Daniel Jones conversation. I don't know if anybody made Daniel Jones look like that until Brian Daboll.
Right. I thought Pat Shurmur year one.
Yeah.
DJ, statistically, his best year.
True.
Enough.
True. He just couldn't stop fumbling, but at least he threw the ball down the field.
You're right, right. It wasn't perfect.
It was a turnover.
Yeah. I think here's the point, and we'll see if we end up in this situation. And for your sake, I hope we don't. It's very challenging to have a 4-win year that you come away with saying, all right, we're in a good spot.
I feel okay.
It's tough. Like, yes, I give you this, Sean. You created a scenario that probably makes it the most doable because it's like, all right, we won a few games early, tough schedule. We decided to go to Jackson Dart. He played well. We couldn't win. We won 4 games. Like, you're right. You probably created the best scenario at the end of the season where you're feeling good from a 4-win year, but it's very tough.
I agree. It's very,
very
tough.
Very challenging.
This is just the point I've made, especially with a rookie quarterback in waiting. Not all win totals are created equal. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that, but 3 and 4 wins in a 17-game season is rough. It's just rough.
I'm not fighting that. I'm not fighting that.
Let's go to Chris in Bayshore. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, hey, guys. How we doing?
We're good. What's up, dude?
What's up?
Listen, Piggy, congrats on a new gig. That's a great, great thing. Looking forward to hearing you.
You
know, you guys are talking about the catching situation with the Yanks. I called out the Giants, but I agree to 100%, Evan. I think there's a clear difference between Rice and Wells, and I think that Rice needs to play. I mean, I think he's clearly a better player.
He's earned it, and it doesn't mean Austin Wells is buried because, look, no catcher can play every day, so Wells will get his at-bats. But I think right now is a way to get his bat in the lineup. And, again, I think his defense has been fine. He should catch most of the time. And it sounds and it looks like Boone's moving in that direction. So good on him.
Yeah, I think that's a great move. But as far as the Giants go, after the one game, it's easy to be optimistic and everything looked great. But I don't know if I'm in the minority or not. But, I Daboll is my least favorite Giant coach since Ray Hanley. I mean, I can't.
Why don't you like him?
I just think Daboll, I think he's one of these guys who, in the room, thinks he knows everything. I think I don't like his style. I think he's one of these guys who is when it's the flavor of the month, assistant coaches kind of, benefited from that. And I think he's shown absolutely nothing. The first year, but I think he's had ample opportunity. And I just, there's something really, really, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think he's, Maybe Judge excluded, but
well, hold on. Let's play a game because Ray Handley was eras ago. Okay, it was too long ago.
Yeah, people don't even remember.
No, you're right. Like I was even too young to remember the Ray Handley era, and I'm certainly Sean did as well.
Yes.
Plus, the Giants then recovered and had a pretty good era of Giant football, where you guys made the playoffs, went to a Super Bowl, and then, dare I say, won a couple under Coughlin. There have been 4 coaches in the post-Coughlin era. Let's play a game. Let's have some fun. Let's smile on this Tuesday. Let's rank who we hate the most from the big 4. Now, Brian Daboll is one of them, and I think it'll be more interesting with Loogie than the rest of you guys, because you guys like Daboll, which is great.
Right.
Tommy accused him of crimes last year. Basically said he was committing football crimes by tanking on the field. But you have Brian Daboll, you have Joe Judge, you have Pat Shurmur, and you have Ben McAdoo.
Oof.
Let us rank them in terms of sucking the most. Again, oops, I didn't want to use that word.
Right.
Incompetence. Is that the right word? What word should we use to rank these 4? Numbskulls.
It's hard because it is also incompetence. It's also just dumb decision making. It is hubris. It's all these things that just don't make you a good head coach. And to me, it's a tie for the bottom. Judge and McAdoo, and then it's Shurmur. I like Dabes, and I'm biased because I have a personal relationship with Brian Daboll, and obviously his first year, seeing what he re-brought, like real culture and real accountability, was something we hadn't seen in so long.
Hold on, I want to get this straight, because I'm writing all this stuff down. You have Judge and McAdoo tied for number one on the Doofus scale. You got Shermer in third, because obviously one is taken up by two spots. Yeah. And then Brian Daboll, fourth place. I like Brian Daboll. I just want to make sure I got this right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tommy Lugauer, I want you to rank the four doofuses.
Joe Judge.
Joe Judge is number one.
Number one.
Okay. Just the QB sneak out of the
inside. He quit on the field.
Did he quit?
He quit. He pulled an Adam Gase and quit.
That is not forgivable.
Agreed.
Wow.
Can't do that.
Okay.
Right.
Shermer.
Shermer's tone.
Dable.
What?
McAdoo.
You love you some McAdoo?
I just think if he had gotten as many chances, because now Sean even is giving Brian Daboll another season.
Years, right? He didn't even get to finish the
second year. That's what I'm saying.
Right. He had fist fights happening on airplanes.
That's true. Didn't a coach punch or try to?
No, that was Joe Judge. More on that later.
This is why this game is so much fun. They're all doofuses. And even though Tommy disagreed, here's the point of this game. While it's fun to reminisce on bad Giant coaches, Brian Daboll is not worse than those three guys.
I agree.
We'll quibble with Tommy about it, and I've had my critiques of Brian Daboll. He is not worse than Shermer, Judge, and McAdoo.
The only thing that Daboll has going against him is more time here. He could still do more things to add to the resume of bad stuff.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. He won a playoff game. What did Ben McAdoo do in his one playoff
game? No, obviously it was an S show.
Let everybody go to Miami.
Exactly.
Well,
boys
will be boys. I'm sure that they're not going to church for the games, players, but yeah.
Hold on. Okay. They didn't just lose the
Russell
game.
Russell Wilson's doing Bible study.
Wow. Russ is, that's fair. Russ is in
No, that's Jameis Winston doing it.
Yeah, Jameis Winston's having Bible study. But Russ is probably too.
That's true. They've got rival Bible studies. McAdoo did not have as much time as Daboll. You're right. But in terms of what did they do here, I'd argue Dable's success was better than McAdoo's success. Because here's another thing. Hold on. I'm going to fight this fight. Ben McAdoo inherited a Hall of Fame quarterback and a wide receiver that was playing at the top of his game. Brian Daboll inherited Daniel Jones. And Malik Nabers wasn't even here yet.
Who was the number one wide receiver in 22? I'm forgetting now.
In 22, I believe was
Saquon Barkley as a running back.
It was
by the end of the year, ended up being Isaiah Hodgins, who they acquired midseason.
Yeah, so think about
it. He was clutch, though.
Hodgins was clutch, but I mean, he was familiar because Dave's had him up in Buffalo.
So as we're talking this through, Tommy, you still want to have Daboll behind Ben McAdoo?
Yeah, I mean, McAdoo had more horses on defense, too. Had a lot of veteran guys that played really well in that playoff year. I just go back to the fact that we don't know what Brian Daboll's going to do for the rest of his tenure. He could still do something that's like catastrophic, so I'm not going to put him ahead of McAdoo. Does that make sense?
Fair enough. That's your ranking. Sean, where are your list?
I can't believe I'm complete opposite. First of all, Brian Daboll's on another stratosphere than these other three. I just want to make that
another
very
stratosphere.
Clear.
Like, he hasn't won a Super Bowl. The guy won one playoff game.
Brian Daboll gets fired. I mean, this Brian Daboll gets fired this year. He will get another NFL head coaching.
I don't know about that. Point.
He's
I don't think that's a guarantee.
I think he would be. Okay, the worst one is Pat Shermer. Like by far, as big a doofus as the other two are.
Sean, before you continue,
dude,
I can't wait to give you my IFO list.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna tell you right now. You and I may be on the same page.
Joe Judge is an absolute boob.
Hold on. You guys missed the boat on this. Both Tiki and Lugie missed the boat. It's not even close. It's Pat Shermer. Yeah. With all due respect.
Okay.
Continue on.
We're also talking about head coaching. Ben McAdoo, despite whatever roster was handed to him, did win 11 games. Now, he lost control of the locker room the next year. Whether you believe it or not, he had an eye for Patrick Mahomes. I guess I'm going to slant him up there. Pat Shermer.
Who cares? He didn't get him.
Pat Shermer, as the quarterback OC guy, was at the epicenter of Daniel Jones as my selection at quarterback, which also further set this back. He also operated an offense that simultaneously had Saquon and Odell Beckham Jr. and still couldn't win football games. Joe Judge, as bad as Joe Judge was, and I am not advocating for him at all, he was the second hire by an incompetent general manager, then also had an offensive coordinator named Jason Garrett forced into being hired by him, which then brought Mark Colombo, who tried to fistfight Joe Judge. Joe Judge, for as bad as he was set up to fail from the beginning
with
the position he was in.
But why?
Why? I mean, well, first, well, the moment you have
when
to
you say set up the fail, okay, that means it, if, it sounds intentional.
If you're being told, hey, this is the offensive coordinator we want to put with you, you're not hiring your own OC. That's not set up to fail?
It sounds like we don't trust you. We have no one else to hire. Yeah. So we're hiring you because Bill Belichick said to hire you.
And from all accounts, those couple drafts with Gettleman, it sounded like the two completely clashed heads on everything they wanted to do. Mm. So I'm not telling you, in the end, he was a crappy head coach.
Right.
So we're arguing semantics here.
And he has not gotten another opportunity and will never.
I totally
get another opportunity.
So anything I'm saying pro-judge is not really pro-judge. It's just pro-judge in weighing to the options. Pat Shurmur was a worse head coach who also came in with experience.
I love the spin on this, though. Daniel Jones had his best season with Pat Shurmur.
Yeah,
so if Pat Shurmur had stick around, and Daniel Jones might have had a better career with the Giants. Can you dispute that on any level?
He had his best throwing the ball down the field season.
Right, which is one of his biggest strengths that they went backwards with when the clapper came here and they decided we're not going to throw the ball down the field anymore.
I agree. Joe Judge and Garrett further ruined Daniel Jones. Ben, after that, Brian Daboll still found a way to make the playoffs with the guy who won a playoff game.
Yes.
By
so
running
what is
the
your,
ball.
What is your list? You have Shurmur number one.
Shurmur, McAdoo, Judge, Daboll.
Wow. Mm. Interesting. That's very. So you're going Shurmur, McAdoo, Judge, Daboll. Judge, Shurmur, Daboll, McAdoo, and Tiki went Judge, McAdoo at the top, Shurmur, Daboll.
This is just a very sad exercise.
Oh, I think this is fun. I don't know about you. This is fascinating.
Well, wait, we won't do the Jets.
The Jet one is actually pretty easy.
Yeah, because they're all on the same level.
We have to go post Rex Ryan because Rex had success. Is that fair?
Yes.
So you're looking at Todd Bowles, Adam Gase, Robert Saleh, and do we include Jeff Albrecht?
I mean, you have to, because he basically coached 80% of the season.
I'm gonna give you thought on that, and I'll give you an answer in a few minutes. Here's my giant one. I got to tell you, I agree with Sean about Shurmur.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, the thing about all four of these guys is I can find positives in all of them. Mm-hmm. I know that's tough to do because it was so bad. So I can give you positives on all of them. Like, Ben McAdoo did make the postseason.
Of course.
They had a really good... Now,
11
I thought
games. They won double-digit games.
Now, they had a lot of talent on that roster, especially on defense. They just had, like, this huge jump in a giant free agency, and Odell Beckham Jr. was making incredible plays, and you still had Eli Manning. So I can find positives on all of them. The Giants were a non-competitive mess under Pat Shurmur. And to me, again, as an IFO, I'm looking at all four of them and saying, who gave me a chance of hope? Three of them did. Mm. Joe Judge overachieved in 2020, and they were a win away. Not a win away. The Eagles not pulling crap away from winning the division. And I know it was only 6 wins, Evan. It doesn't count.
It would have been the worst division winner of all time.
It doesn't matter.
That's very true.
Joe Judge overachieved with that. I'm giving him some love here. I still think he stunk.
Now, they could have had a 7th win if Evan Engram could catch a ball in primetime.
I agree. And that's a part of it, too. Pat Shurmur gave you nothing. Zero. Now, did he get the most out of Daniel Jones? Absolutely. But here's the thing about Pat Shurmur. He's a wonderful offensive coordinator. He's a great offensive coordinator. Sure. As a head coach of the four, as someone who is here, working, talking about this crap every day, he was the worst. I agree with Sean. Number two is challenging. I'm going to actually give it to Ben McAdoo. Because somehow McAdoo couldn't get through a second season. You win 11 games. Mm. And you cause such a mess in your room, you can't complete a second season. Here's the thing about Joe Judge.
That's hard to do.
Very tough to do. Here's the thing about Joe Judge. He talked himself out of the job. He said a lot of dumb things at the end, and you're right, he gave up on the field. I hate that. That team stunk. They had no talent. He cost himself the job by doing dumb things like giving up on the field and saying ridiculous things to the media. So McAdoo was worse because he got himself fired even before the second year ended.
True. The other thing with Joe Judge is that when Dave Gettleman was resigned, then you had to give your new general manager a say in who was going to be the new head coach.
Yeah.
So Joe Judge was obviously talked himself out of the job, all those things we've been saying about, but it was also the circumstances of the Gettleman era ending.
100%. Now, while you guys were all arguing this, I did put out a poll, which I think, Sean, is the face of Giant fandom with your very popular podcast, One Giant Step, I think you owe the audience a retweet because you have a lot of Giant fan friends. I put the poll out in the post-Coughlin era, which has been the worst head coach for the New York Giants, McAdoo, Shurmur, Judge, and Daboll. The early returns, number one, and Tommy knew this going in, Daboll is not getting any votes.
Yeah.
I mean, as bad as people were at him at the end of the year, they did make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. There is hope coming into this year. Dable's gotten 3% of the vote, and that's Tommy voting
right.
56 times.
And he drafted the future at quarterback.
That's the hope.
And hope.
That's the hope. So we kind of knew Dable had no shot to win this.
Yes.
But Pat Shurmur is getting no hate.
He gets forgotten about because he doesn't have the lightning rod moment.
Yeah, but it stunk.
It was the limp era. Like that, you don't remember it.
The only things positives you could say about Pat Shurmur are attributed to his ability to be an offensive coordinator.
Right.
Nothing about
how good he looked, how he made Daniel Jones look. You're right.
But when you think about
it's funny. I don't remember the season.
Yeah, two seasons.
Well, 18 and 19.
Yeah. I don't remember them. Like, I don't remember what happened, what my emotion was towards those seasons.
One of them, they lost a heartbreaker when Graham Gano kicked the ball from the parking lot in Carolina.
Wasn't that week one or week two? It was early in the season.
No, it was in October, but it was a brutal loss. They had, a play where Odell threw a touchdown to Saquon. Like, there was, cool design plays, but they were nothing.
Yeah, October 7th, they lost
that game.
What were
their records those years?
They were 5-11.
And 4-12.
And 4-12. So they were 9-21 over the 2-year period, but I think you're right. They were just nondescript and boring.
Right. But they were forgettable seasons.
That tanked Eli's career record those two seasons.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't get a lot of love. He only has 15% of the vote. And then the winner by a significant margin in the early going is Joe Judge. Mm. And I think Judge gets that because of the quarterback sneak and because of the dumb things
he
said.
Because of how he made you feel. You viscerally hated how he coached at the end of that season. You hated it. And then you hated how he talked to defend himself. And it was just like, you're not going to win this argument against Joe Public.
And you know what?
Stop.
And you know what three of the four did that Pat Shurmur didn't do? Three of the four guys actually had decent first years.
Mm-hmm.
Ben McAdoo's first year, 11 wins in the playoffs. Brian Daboll's first year, 9-7-1, a playoff win. And even Joe Judge, I know they won six games, but you got to remember what the feeling was at the end of that season. Giant fans were happy, even though it was only six wins and they almost won the division. It was more, I feel good about the coach, I feel good about the team. Pat Shurmur gave you none of that. You just stunk the entire time. So this is one of those many scenarios where the people are just wrong.
Well, no, here's the lesson. Here's
the lesson. Same list, though.
Here's the lesson. If you're going to be bad, be forgettable.
Yes. And also have two guys with big, unforgettable moments sandwiching
you. That's right.
Now, when we come back, we have a new edition of Posted and Toasted. We will get a lot of your calls. People very passionate about this. 888-808-1019. And in fairness, I will rank the last four Jet head coaches in terms of how awful they were.
Jeez.
It actually isn't as depressing as you think because it makes me think of the hope of today. At least in my case, because you're still stuck with one of those guys. I've got a new one. Having a really tough time, and I'm doing it. I'm ranking the four Jet coaches in the post-Rex Ryan era, an exercise I made the Giant fans do, and it is depressing, but it's also hilarious. So I'll give it to you real quick, and then we'll play a game of Posted and Toasted and get to your phone calls. The worst one, and it was not even close, is Adam Gase. Mm. Adam Gase was a disaster. Adam Gase was a disaster before they hired him. I'll never forget when I brought up the rumor to Joe, and he freaked out, and we both freaked out. Then they hire the guy, and the press conference was an unmitigated disaster, and obviously his tenure here. So Adam Gase is a clear number one. Number two is Jeff Ulbrich. Like, the reason I won't make him worse is because I think he was put in a bad situation. So there is a part of me that says, boy, this was a tough spot to begin with.
Right.
But you talk about a guy that was not ready to be the head coach, a guy that was overcome by the job. Jeff Ulbrich is two. And then number three is Robert Saleh. Like, I can't believe that Todd Bowles comes away from this scot-free, right. But when I look back at the Bowles era, as much as we were ready to get rid of him, at least they had a 10-win season.
No, and there was some talent on that team. Right? They made some plays. Right? Who was
Brandon Marshall? Darrell Revis had come back.
Yeah, it felt like, all right, maybe this team can sneak in some success here. It obviously didn't last, but at least Todd Bowles got another head coaching job, has done relatively well in that second stint as a head coach. These other guys have not.
No, that's a big sign.
I had to look up what Adam Gase is doing now.
What is Adam Gase doing now?
He is currently working as a strategic advisor for the 33rd team, which is it's a tech company that analyzes football. Rondé actually works for the 33rd.
It's how the Jets hired Aaron Glenn.
Right,
he's going to go to them.
But Mike Tannenbaum is the founder.
That's right.
So he hired him.
I kind of vaguely remember this when they were going to the 33rd team, seeing Gase was involved, being like, "Oh my God, he's going to come back."
Yeah.
So I put the poll out for Jet fans like I did for Giant fans. Giant fans overwhelmingly say their worst head coach in the post-Coughlin era was Joe Judge, followed by McAdoo, Shermer, and Daboll's only getting 4% of the vote. Mm. Well, Todd Bowles is doing even better than Daboll. Todd Bowles only gets 2% of the vote.
Wow.
Gase is leading with 78% of the vote.
It's a landslide.
It's a landslide. And Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich are tied at 10%, which is just very sad.
Well, they were the same staff, so the same people.
Look, it was bad all the way around. Now, let's play a quick game of Posted and Toasted here on The Fan.
It's time for Posted and Toasted.
Read the old tweets of FAN coworkers. Tiki guesses who tweeted it. Let's go to March 7th, 2023. I am so pumped that the Giants and Daniel Jones got this deal done. I truly believe the best is yet to come with DJ. Barkley back on the tag is clutch, too. This is a great day for us Giant fans. Mm. Is that Sean Morash, Tommy Lugauer, Chris Big Mac McMonagle, or Tiki Barber?
That's Sean.
You're wrong.
How is that not Sean?
That's not me?
That sounds exactly like Sean.
That is not Sean, no.
Huh. September?
March 7th, 2023.
March 7th of 2023.
It was right after they got the DJ and the Barkley stuff done.
I don't even think I wasn't tweeting then. So
it wasn't you?
I was saying Big Mac.
You're wrong.
Tommy?
Positive.
No,
Tommy.
Biggie.
Tommy. You were very optimistic.
I was extremely optimistic.
Then it all went down.
Well, I mean, listen, Saquon Barkley obviously had a massive year with the Eagles, so I was right about wanting Barkley on the team. I think so, right? That checks out. And Daniel Jones is going to have a great year with the Colts, so I think it really checks out that way, too.
Yeah, just a couple of years off.
Just a couple of years off. That's right.
Let's go to April 9th, 2020. Ed O'Neill and Married with Children was LeBron in the finals with Matthew Dellavedova. Ed O'Neill in Modern Family was LeBron with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh.
Whoever that is, I'm just telling you, that's a great tweet.
It is a great tweet, but it is so deep, it hurts my brain to even think about it.
Was that?
Because now I got to remember all of these shows.
Brandon Tierney, Sean Morash, Sal Licata, or Evan Roberts?
That's an Evan Roberts type tweet.
You're wrong.
You didn't tweet that?
No.
Did you? Dellavedova. Who would know and think about? This is BT.
You're wrong.
No. I thought Sean gave it away when he said it was a brilliant tweet.
That was me?
How do you not know your own tweets?
You didn't even know that was you?
So I'm so confused. I thought for sure Tommy's Daniel Jones signing tweet was my tweet. I don't remember tweeting that at all. And I love the take. So that makes sense. It's so accurate.
I don't know. So you're saying.
Read it again.
Ed O'Neill in Married with Children
was
LeBron in the finals with Matthew Dellavedova. Ed O'Neill in Modern Family was LeBron with Wade and Bosh. Basically, he's saying the cast of Modern Family was just loaded with talent, and the cast with Married with Children was not, which I think is ridiculous.
I agree with Evan.
No, Christina Applegate?
Dude, legendary.
Dude, Modern Family.
And I apologize. I forget the wife's name.
Katie Sagal.
She was tremendous.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a horrible take.
It's actually a bad tweet.
No way.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up. It doesn't hold up. When you really think about it, it doesn't hold up.
What is the better all-time show? It's Modern Family because of the death.
No, it's not. Married with Children.
Married with Children was iconic.
I disagree.
Hold on. I think both shows are tremendous. And
by the way,
I've never seen
Modern Family, so I don't know.
So you don't even know.
I was out of the sitcom world at that point.
I think both shows are all-timers. I'm quibbling with you putting down the cast that he was on with. I mean, Christina Applegate and Katie Sagal, all of a sudden you're saying that. Yeah. And even the one who played Marcy, she was great. Yes.
Neither of them have the performance Ty Burrell has as Phil Dunphy. Okay.
Ty Burrell ruined that show. They became.
What?
They made him such a klutz that the show became unwatchable.
He's arguably the greatest TV dad of all time.
Stop it. And let me correct myself. Ty Burrell didn't ruin the show. The writers ruined the show because they relied too much on him being a clown. They made him a clown.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
It reminds me of what Boy Meets World did with Corey's older brother. They made the guy too big of a clown.
And Julie Bowen and Sofia Vergara, they walk circles around Peg Bundy in acting.
Now let's get to our third Posted and Toasted. This is from February 19th, 2014.
Something about Peg Bundy.
Cheeky likes a Peg Bundy.
Hey, the older I get, I'm with you. I was more of a Kelly Bundy when I was younger. Now I'm like, man, Peg, I didn't realize the game. I didn't recognize it at that point.
You look back and say, why was Al so not into his wife? You're like, what?
Yeah. And you can't do that show anymore, and I think that adds to it a little bit.
True.
Like, you know what I mean?
That's
when you walk back, oh, that's what the 90s were like, the carefree Clinton era.
Great show. It's up there, man. This is a tweet from February 19th, 2014. I'd be more interested in the Olympics if we were competing against Iraq, Iran, and Al-Qaeda. Russia isn't really Russia anymore.
What? I'm praying that's not me.
This is 2014?
Yes. Is that Evan Roberts, Sean Morash, Al Dukes, or Greg Giannotti?
That sounds like an Al Dukeser.
Malachi Corley.
Thank God.
You are correct.
He gets deep.
Yeah. Well, at the time,
okay, so let's think about this.
Yes.
Russia isn't really Russia, meaning they're just not cheating anymore, so they can't be the villain?
No, we didn't look at them in 2014. And by the way, Al wasn't the only one. I'll never forget the Obama-Romney debate from 2012. And this one does not look good for the former president, where he basically made Romney out like, Russia's not a threat. What the hell's wrong with you? Now, as we sit here today, I think we'd all agree, Romney was right. Okay, right. We can at least say that.
Yes.
So at the time, Al is thinking along the lines of the president, which is, Russia ain't Russia anymore. They're nothing. So the real threats are, hey, Iran, Al-Qaeda. We had the whole thing with Iraq.
Right.
So I get where he's coming from. Yeah. I think in 2014, it made a lot of sense.
But he was referencing the Olympics, wasn't he?
Yeah, because he's saying when we face countries we truly hate, like the Soviets in 1980, that adds more stock to it.
I got it.
That was his point.
Got
it. I have another Olympic tweet that I'll use at a later date that is classic. This is March 17th, 2019. This is one of those old-fashioned, this tweet was aged horribly wrong. The Odell Beckham to Cleveland rumor is hysterical. People are so gullible, they'll fall for anything on Twitter. Eh? Now, as you may recall, Odell did get...
Of course.
Yeah. Was that Evan Roberts, Greg Giannotti, Sean Morash, or Brandon Tierney?
I'm going to say that was Sean.
Philosophical differences.
That was Sean Morash. Congratulations. Why were you so wrong about that?
Why did you think it wasn't happening?
Yeah.
I thought it was obvious it was happening. It was just a matter of timing.
I could take a guess here. I think Sean on the national network had a lot of connections. He has a friend in Cleveland that was probably telling him that this isn't happening, and you got bad info.
It is by far the lowest moment of my career in terms of sourcing to me that I've ever had.
That's why we are not newsmakers.
Right.
We are entertainers.
Like to the point I had a falling out with somebody.
Really? So someone told you that. They obviously turned out to be wrong. Mm-hmm. You look like an idiot because you were going all in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So have you talked to the guy since or gal since?
Yeah. But there was like a hard 3 months of like, because that I became one of a million times a mockery online.
Did that same person give you that Jameis Winston is a bad teammate stuff? Because
No.
He was in Cleveland too. Your Cleveland sources, you might need to get new ones.
No, not that one. I don't trust this
Jameis
person at all.
Jameis is a great teammate. He's just crazy.
And he walks around barefoot. Did we know that? What do they call that?
What's his name?
Branding. You're grounding with the world.
Yeah.
Who does that as well?
Noah Syndergaard.
Matt Collins. And the Dodger
Syndergaard
pitcher.
Syndergaard does it too?
I think he did years ago. And the Dodger reliever that we watched, I forget which one.
But is he fully committed to it?
Noah Syndergaard isn't even pitching, so God knows what he's committed to.
No, he's pitching now.
Matt Collins was fully committed to it.
What does that mean? He does it all the time?
He does not wear shoes, even if it's 4 degrees outside.
Wow.
He walked from the World Trade Center to here in the wintertime to our building in bare feet.
Yes.
That's impressive.
And he doesn't take the elevator. He walks upstairs.
That's impressive.
Because nobody or nothing is going to take him where he has to go.
I like that. Very philosophical.
He's badass. He is hands down the greatest prep interview for a game that we've ever done.
I can imagine.
And he was just like a bit player.
Yeah.
But he was awesome.
Fascinating. All right. Next week, another edition of Posted and Toasted. Let's go to Ben in Stamford, Connecticut. What's up, Ben? Hello, Ben.
Hey.
Hey, what's up,
hey,
Ben?
Hey, guys. Hey, how's everyone today?
Good. What's on your mind?
This contest might be the greatest thing of the summer. for me, and I just had to double check, I went back and looked a little bit at Joe Judge's rant.
Yes.
Where he said people were literally calling from other teams begging to come back to the Giants.
I forgot about that one.
I mean, that is like he said, and I think he said, like, even though they're getting paid someplace else, they're begging me to come back next year. So that to me is an automatic like disqualifier to not be number one. And I think to me, like, Pat Shurmur is kind of just like Barney Fife. Like, just completely kind of inept. Like, you give him a gun with no bullets. and he's just completely lost.
Right.
And then for like my going back to movies and TV, McAdoo was started off as like Police Academy 1, Steve Guttenberg, who was pretty funny. And then the five sequels after were just so tiresome, and you were just like, oh my God, this is terrible.
That is a great analogy. And then
thank
that
you.
Is and great. Because, see, these guys don't know, they don't know Police Academy. You have no idea, do
no,
you, Sean?
No, not really. Nope. The Party 5 thing I got, though.
Police Academy was epic. Like, the first one was the funniest thing you've ever seen.
Right.
It was so, it's such incompetence from guys who are supposed to be protecting our city, whatever. But it was, I forget the guy's name who made all the noises with his voice, his mouth. Like, he can make any noise. Gun, piano, whatever. Airplane. He was a slash comedian. Did you find it, Tommy?
Yeah, was it Larvell Jones?
Yes.
Was that his character name?
Yeah, well, I don't know what his character name
is. Yeah, I think that's just because it was Moses Hightower, yes. Right? That was another character.
Dude, it was you have to catch Police Academy if you ever see it. It is hilarious.
But then it's bad.
And then it's bad.
Right, okay.
So that's like so bad. That's like not watchable.
That's the McAdoo cop.
Right.
Let's go to Edwin in Atlanta. What's up, Edwin?
Hey, Evan, I just wanted to call you out on July 22nd, since you're such a back in the archive guy.
Yes. Yes, what happened July 22nd? I'm curious now.
You said something along the lines of the Giants won't win a lot of games, but Jackson Dart won't start. So I was like, that's very confusing. He's not going to play this season by Evan's standards, and Russell Wilson's not going to be good. So if he's not going to be good, that means Jackson Dart has to play at some point.
And not really.
So it was very confusing.
No, I'll explain it.
Another thing I wanted to say on that.
Yes, go ahead.
Another thing I wanted to say on that is you and BT are very passionate about talking about the Giants' failures. And I don't understand why.
Edwin. I'm being honest about what I think they're going to be. Last year, I was the opposite. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting here telling you why I thought they would be better than people thought. I was wrong, mm-hmm. And maybe I'll be wrong this time. So it is not, and you don't have to believe me. You can think that as a Jet fan, and what you think about BT, same thing. We're Jet fans. We must be saying negative things because we're hateful. Mm-hmm. I promise you I'm not. I'm being honest. I hope I'm wrong. I don't hate the Giants. Never really did. Yankees, on the other hand, I've had my issues with. The Knicks, on the other hand, deep-seated. But to answer the point about Jackson Dart, I have screamed this on the radio as a Jet fan, and I'll be saying it about the Giants. I think it behooves a young quarterback to sit an entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision...
Hard to disagree with that.
Thank you. And the decision to start Jackson Dart shouldn't be based on the Giants' record. It should be based on what's best for him. So I understand and I fully get the phone call, and I actually appreciate him making it to say, hey, I heard you say the Giants are going to stink and Jart shouldn't play. Please explain the contradiction. I'm gladly will explain it. Even if the Giants stink, their decision around Dart should be what's best for him.
Right.
And I really believe that a lot of quarterbacks would benefit from sitting a full year.
Yeah. Now, if it's in a different type of circumstance, Jack, or whatever reason, Russell Wilson is not available, that's a different conversation. Who do you now start, Jackson Dart, or do you start Jameis Winston? And I think a lot of that will depend on where they are in the season. And so if they are late in the year and Russell's unavailable and there's really no shot at making the postseason and you just want to see what this kid can do, given the pressures of playing everyday football or every week football, I should say, then Jackson Dart will play. But if they still think that he needs to be developed and he's not ready and he doesn't want to be put into the pressure cooker, he'll sit, right? It's a conversation that's so far down the line right now, and it's not even one that they're even thinking about.
Not yet.
So it's great to talk about it, but it's not even in the like sphere of talking about
yet. Not quite yet. That's looking down the road. That's a big topic in November.
Right.
I can promise you that. We'll get back to your calls in a few minutes, 888-808-1019. And Steve Cohen has spoken, and you may not realize why.